Hello there, church family. It's good to be with you today as we do our midweek sermon review. This past Sunday was Easter Sunday. I think we had a good time together. I believe we did. Hopefully it honored the Lord, everything we said and did and sang together, all that stuff that we do in our worship services. It was a joy to be able to be together and to talk about the resurrection. And that was the focus of the sermon. We looked in the Gospel of John chapter 20. And I guess we could even add maybe Good Friday a little bit into this, because on Good Friday we had a service, and we looked, really the focus of Good Friday's message was supposed to be on just the little phrase, "It is finished. It is finished." Jesus saying that on the cross. And so on Good Friday, we do our best to keep that service focused on the crucifixion, not necessarily the resurrection, because that's what we're going to talk about on Sunday. But you can't leave Jesus on the cross, right? So you do talk about the hope that comes with that. But the positive thing in "It is finished" was what that meant. One of the books I read was Krumacher. What's his first name? Do you know?
Was it Frederick? I don't know.
I can't remember. I feel like it was two letters. Something Krumacher.
FW.
Something like that. Yeah.
But Friedrich.
He's got a book called The Suffering Savior that I really like. And he had a little chapter on that phrase, "It is finished." And he's a much better writer than I am, speaker or anything. But just talking about the buildup of the plan throughout history, you know, and Jesus really declaring there, not just saying, because you could kind of picture it of Jesus saying, "It's finished," just meaning this body's over. It's time for me to die, so I'm just going to die. I can't take any more. It's finished. But that's not what is happening there. He's declaring, and I even saw one writer say, I don't think this was in that book, but said the reason he asked for a drink was so he could clear his throat to declare it very loudly, you know, type of thing, which again is speculation. Not,
it preaches well.
Yeah, it does preach well, you know.
It sounds nice.
But more of a bold, "It is finished." And what he's declaring there is he's declaring the war is over. The plan that was set before the foundations of the world has been accomplished. And some would say, well, what, the resurrection hadn't happened, the ascension hadn't happened. What the writers had said was, but the work that Jesus came to do was done. It was his willingness to go to the cross, to die for sin. He had declared that. And so when we as Christians look at the cross, which to the world is the most pathetic image of somebody, we look and hold on to those words. Yeah, but on that cross, it is finished. My battle, my war is over because Jesus conquered it for me. And so that's what we looked at on Good Friday. You guys have anything with that at all? With the Good Friday stuff, crucifix, anything you guys want to say? No?
I liked it.
Yeah, okay. Just no, give an opportunity.
Good. No, it was good. It was good.
Okay. And so Sunday... Sorry, Tim. That's good.
I wasn't prepared for Good Friday. We were just thinking Easter, resurrection. That's what we were...
Okay, so you're going to bring a lot here in a second.
Bro.
Looking forward to it.
Watch out. You better watch out.
You said something on Easter Sunday where you said that you don't like to try to get very cute with Easter, Christmas. And I think that is completely fine. Like with Easter, Christmas, Good Friday. It's like we are here to talk about the crucifixion,
right,
of Jesus. Mm-hmm. His death, you know, is part of the work that he came to do. This is like the moment, the climax of the movie, right? The death and the resurrection of Jesus. And it's okay just to sit there and to think about his crucifixion, mm-hmm, and what he went through. And so, like, we obviously talk about it all the time. But I really enjoy having a specific service to just commemorate, like this is kind of the anniversary of that happening, and it's good to just do that.
Yeah, I've heard Christians kind of talk bad about Easter and Christmas just because, probably because of the commercialization that comes around with, mm-hmm, it.
I feel, or, like I've noticed that more this year than other,
yeah,
years.
Or even like we should always be talking about these things, and we do, but I don't think there's anything bad of setting that aside. Like, This is a Sunday we talk about the resurrection, mm-hmm. or Christmas. This is when we talk about the birth of Christ, God being wrapped in flesh, being man, fully God, fully man. Like, those are good topics that are penciled into the schedule for the church to be able to talk about. And to be honest, they're kind of cornerstones of our faith. Like, it's a mm-hmm. good thing to talk about.
And the reality is, I think sometimes maybe Christians, you know, like, feel like you don't have to do that so much, or they say, well, we talk about it all the time. The reality is, like I said, I've noticed the commercialization of Easter more this year mm-hmm. than any other. Like, hearing about different groups that are completely disconnected from any kind of faith doing egg hunts.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And just as fundraisers, and mm-hmm. they're just using the holiday as an opportunity to do that. The reality is, we are the only ones talking about the crucifixion of Jesus on Good Friday.
Yeah.
We are the only ones talking about his resurrection on Easter Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to use it as an opportunity as every chance I get,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
we should too.
Right.
Because nobody else is talking about that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And so that's what we did. We focused on the resurrection. John chapter 20, we read verses 1 through 20, broke it up into a couple sections. Verses 1 through 10 is Mary Magdalene going to the tomb. She runs to tell the disciples, hey, the stone is moved away. The two disciples run. We know that it's Peter and John. They run to the tomb. They do their investigation, and the body isn't there. Just the linens are there. Mary then is back at the tomb at some point. She goes in the tomb. There's angels there. Ask her, why are you sad? Why are you crying? And it's obvious Mary believes somebody took him. Somebody stole his body away. Even to the point that Jesus shows up, asks her why she's crying. She says, did you take him? Type of thing. But then Jesus says her name. She recognizes his voice. She goes to him, wants to hug him, cling to him. He says, no, don't do that now. I need you to go tell the disciples what had happened. And so she does that. The next scene, that's verses 1 through 10. That's verses 1 through 18.
You're jumping ahead.
Yeah, that's all of those. And then verses 19 and 20, really there's more verses there, but I just read 19:20 is when Jesus appears to the disciples. They're in a locked room. They make sure that they point that out, that it was a locked room. Jesus shows up, which is a miracle that happened there. And he says to them, peace be with you, which is a very common phrase that they would have said to each other. But then he shows them, right? He shows them himself. It says, showed his hands, showed his side, and it says the disciples were glad at that point. The focus, though, I wanted it to be on peace be with you and what that meant. A lot of things Jesus could have said to his disciples, the first thing. Would have been a great time to play a practical joke. Could have really
gotten must good. Not have been April Fool's.
Yeah, which today is.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. And when I woke up, I was really confused. I thought yesterday was March 30th all day.
Tim's been at the beach. He's a little sunbaked.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, today's April. but anyways, that phrase, peace be with you, peace, I wanted to think about that. That's something that's always kind of stuck with me, honestly, during the Christmas season. As we do Advent, peace is one of those words that you focus on during Advent. And that one's always jumped out to me because I do think that everybody in the world is after peace. But it just seems to be that carrot, you know, that's just dangling out there that we can't grasp. And I think it's very relatable, though, to anybody. If you talk to anybody in any country, any state, and you start to bring up peace, they're all going to say, that's what I would desire. That's something that I would like to have. But then you have to obviously define what that means. And so that's kind of what I tried to talk about. We walked through the 20 verses, but really at the end was getting to the peace part that I wanted to spend most of the time on. I probably didn't spend most of the time on that, but that's what I wanted to focus on, is this idea of peace. And And so I kind of did a little bit of research. One is in the Old Testament, and when they would talk about peace and what that meant. And so it did mean relationally between people or even kingdoms, but also a peace with God. And that's where we read the benediction that God told Moses to tell Aaron, that Aaron would then speak over the people to bless them. And a big part of that was peace. Go with peace. And it was an understanding of a peace with God, right? As you leave, know that there's peace between you and God because, again, of what God has done, what God has provided, the sacrifice, whatever it would be right at the moment. And so we see that in the Old Testament. But what we also see in the Old Testament is, according to like our definition of peace, and I guess even there's the peace between kingdoms and stuff, it never occurs, right? We don't ever see it happen. The Old Testament's filled with strife for Israel, a lot of struggle, but yet they still desire peace, and we still see peace promised. I read in Isaiah, and I think you read that yesterday, in the service of Isaiah, where there is a promise of peace, a personal peace between you and God, and also a peace between you and creation and the world, where there's going to be no more struggling, no more hurt, no more crying. And again, this is what Israel was longing for, right? They're really longing for it. And I think that's why, and you guys maybe could share your two cents here, that's why I think the disciples and the religious leaders would have struggled so much with Jesus and what he was talking about. Because when you're talking about the Messiah was going to bring peace. And this is the peace that they're thinking. But Jesus is kind of going a different route a little bit. He's not focusing so much on peace between brothers or peace between the Jews and the Romans or whatever. He's talking more about peace between you and God. Mm. And that seemed to, I don't want to say it was washed away and they didn't care about that. I do think that the people of Israel cared about that. But this other piece seemed to be more of the focus. I don't know. Would you guys agree with that rundown?
Yeah, I think peace is something everybody is looking for. I was talking to somebody in our church just recently, and they were talking about somebody who's an atheist at their workplace, and I just brought up the fact that even the atheist has some sense that there is something wrong in the world. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't even go to work, because every single form of work is trying to bring order or to make something better, or to do something for productivity, or even if it's simply to put food in your own mouth, you consider that a problem to be solved. So everybody in the world, regardless of their religion or lack thereof, believes there is something out of harmony in the universe. Things are not the way they should be, and there is a better way, a way to improve this, a way to fix this. Even if they would say we can never ultimately fix it perfectly, they're still trying to move in a direction according to some standard that maybe that's the Bible standard or maybe it's not. So everybody's looking for this. We're always looking for all of the things in our life to come into perfect harmony, for all of the dissonance in our world to be resolved into perfect harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the idea of peace is in the Old Testament. It's the idea where all of the pieces are where they should be, where everything is the way it ought to be. The whole world is put back perfectly. And so, yes, I think whenever the Jewish leaders, though, whenever they were thinking about peace, the way the world ought to be in their mind was us on top, right? Because remember, they're thinking, we want to, if we don't get this Jesus under control, they're going to take away both our nation and us in our place. So for them, peace looked like where everything was the way it should be, was with them on top and the Gentiles in subservience, and the Jews ruling the world through a powerful military Messiah. And Jesus is saying that peace, the thing that's going to bring about peace, though, is not a military dominance, but it's ultimately the real problem, the real source of all of the friction and the dissonance and disharmony in this world is our own sin. mm-hmm. and our guilt and our shame that flows from that of being separated from God. And so Jesus' cross is there to bring about that resolution, thereby bringing about having the seeds within it of the full peace for everybody else to come about. So I think they were looking for peace. I mean, the Old Testament, you talked about Leviticus, right? The promise of, or maybe it was number 6, where Aaron is to bless them with peace. But then you also see it in Isaiah, right before Isaiah 53, Isaiah 52, where it says, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, mm-hmm. who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns." Mm-hmm. So the gospel itself is a message of peace, that the God that God has is reigning and has defeated all of the enemies that that had conquered us, and he has delivered us and redeemed us. And it's a new exodus, right? Pharaoh and all of his chariots have once again, in an even more dramatic way, been sunk to the bottom. And he has brought about peace for his people and salvation. So the gospel itself is a proclamation of this peace of what Jesus has done for us and what God has done for us in mm-hmm. Christ. So that's kind of a long-winded way, but I do think that this peace is something everybody's after, peace.
Yeah, when you look at today's culture, What do you guys think? What is the most common way, you know, people are seeking after peace? You know, for me, I think I tried to write it down a little bit, but today peace I put defined as like freedom for all disturbances and like tranquility or even difficulty. And so a lot of people would think peace is having enough money to not have to worry, to have enough health that you don't have to worry. For a lot of people, it's to have your kids in a status that you're comfortable with, you know, whatever that status would be. A lot of people seek it, you know, and with education and grades or sports or extracurricular things, whatever, that would have to be involved in it, because all that stuff, I think, takes up so much people's time.
I think if you could boil all that down to one thing, I think what people really are looking for is just certainty about the future.
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to know certainty about my future and my family's future.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have enough money, I can be certain about the future.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what ends up happening is life and things that you can't predict. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those are just the ways people try to get that certainty.
Yeah.
That of whether it's financial mm-hmm. or your kids having a certain status because of whatever, mm-hmm. it seems to me to come back to certainty.
Yeah, I think control. That's good. Yeah, 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 mm-hmm. for sure. And so I think what is heartbreaking is seeing people live their life that way. And we all do that. Mm-hmm. We all do that to an extent, for sure. But to see people just giving their all for that, when you know, we know biblically, not going to grab the carrot at the end. You're just not going to, it's not there. It's not going to be found in the stuff that you're searching after. And that's why it's a privilege to be able to preach a message like I had the privilege of preaching Sunday, or looking at a passage like this and us talking about it now, is there is peace available, though. You know, again, I think the world dangles that carrot and we can't grab it. There's definitely people who grab money and there's who grab status. Don't get me wrong. I know that stuff. But even if you talk to them, peace hasn't been found. Mm-hmm. There's still struggles and difficulties and hardships. But the Bible tells us there is a peace that lasts. There's a peace that would never let you go. And it's through what we talked about. It's through Jesus, it's through his death, his burial, and his resurrection. And it's a promise that is, it's a promise that has been given, and it's a promise that is there. And Jesus said this numerous times already in John. Right? He said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you." This is John 14. "Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." And then in John 16, "Behold, the hour is coming, indeed it has come, when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I've said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world, You will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. This is the promise of Jesus, that he can give you peace. And it's a peace from what we've been talking about, is that peace from your sin and the struggles of life, of your relationship with God, knowing that it's not where it needs to be because you are a sinner. The Jews were very clear on this. They had the law, they knew the law, and they knew they couldn't match up to the law, no matter how hard they tried. Today, I think that's been watered down some, but I still think generally most people know they are not as good as they want to be. You know, I really do think that. I think it was in, I don't know if we talked about this in the past, but it was in our Bible study, or not our Bible study / prayer meeting on a Wednesday night. In the book we were reading, it was brought up, when was the last time you were alone? Like, alone. No TV, no distraction. And he brought up the show Alone, where they go out in the woods or whatever. And I asked, it was a bunch of men in there, what's the longest you've ever been alone? And nobody answered me. And the reason nobody answered me is because we've never been alone, really. And what the book pointed out is when you get alone, you start to think about yourself. And if you ever watch the show Alone, these people start crying because they didn't treat their mom well. Mm-hmm. You know, they cry because they miss their wives and their kids. And they start to say things like, I need to be a better dad, you know, or I'm a horrible mom because I'm out here and I need to do this. This guilt starts to wrap itself around you when you really start to think about yourself, and nobody can really hide from that. And sadly, today we don't do that a lot, though. We don't really think about that. But when you really pose that question and give people an opportunity to think about it, I think it becomes pretty crystal clear. Like, yeah, I'm not as good as I portray or that I would want to be. And so what Jesus is saying here is he's saying, yeah, that's the peace I'm talking about that I can give to you. Mm-hmm. So that when you're sitting all alone and you think about all the bad you are, the next thought I want you to have is how good I am, my perfect life, and that I've given that to you. It's yours. Just by faith, believe and trust in this. It's yours completely. And to be able to offer that to people who are running this rat race and seeking peace and all this stuff, that's only the church that has that offer. Nobody else has that offer. And so that goes back kind of, Scott, what you were saying earlier, of like, why would we not talk about this on Easter? This is the offer that is given. And it's a good reminder to Christians, too, because we fall back and struggle with peace and stuff. Even though we know all these things, we need to be reminded of it often. It's like, this is what Christ has done. And so as I read that quote, it was a quote from Martin Luther, in one of his sermons. I think the sermon was called Fruit of Christ's Resurrection. And he talked about in there of like, it's not a peace of the world where he gets rid of all the enemies and all the turmoil. No, it's a peace where Christ is walking with you in the midst of that and telling you, you're still mine. I haven't let you go, right? Because a lot of times we're our own worst enemy. It's not the outside people, it's us. But even in the outside stuff, bad doctor's appointments, marriage mess ups, I don't know. We can go on and on. Trouble at work, suffering.
Misbehaving children.
Yeah, whatever. All that kind of stuff. We as Christians, knowing what Christ has done, should see that those things very differently than everybody else does. This isn't what's stealing my peace. No, nothing can steal my peace because Christ holds my peace. But these are things that I can do my best to deal with in a biblical way, trust the Lord in them, whether they're there or whether they go away, still give him praise in the midst of all of that. I don't know. I guess when I stand up, I've said this many times, but I just feel like I'm pleading and looking at faces. And honestly, there are some, you know, you're like, you need this. You're looking at, you know, you're thinking, you need this. Just trust in this. And it is hard when I don't feel like they do. Mm. And it's like, you're just going back out there to run that hamster wheel for nothing. There's nothing there. Everything is here, you know? Mm. I guess that parable kind of jumps out to me where it's like, there's the treasure in the field. Do everything you can to go by the field because that's the, you know, that's the treasure. Mm. And that's what it feels like. You know, it's like, here's the treasure. Just take it. And they're like, no, I think I'll go buy this over here.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And what seems to be the amazing witness to the world around us is not Christians who are putting a life together where there's no turmoil that's visible in their life. And it appears to everyone like they have the perfect life. What is a huge witness to the world around us is when we have peace in the midst of the turmoil, right? And peace despite what else is going on. That always seems to be what ends up being a great witness to unbelievers around who are also in the midst of turmoil. And the peace that surpasses all understanding seems to be with this person, but it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Right, and that really drives people to curiosity, and that's why our search is not to get rid of the turmoil, because we know that can't happen. As long as sin is still here, that can't happen. And so, where are we resting? Where do we have that peace? And,
yeah, when we think that stuff will go away, we're really like the Jewish leaders who thought the Messiah would come and demolish everything, and now we're the greatest, right? And no, it wasn't the time for that. Restoration wasn't coming in that way. That's not what Jesus. Now he's promised to come back, and that will happen. That will take place. But we still wait for that. We still wait for that day, knowing that Christ is with us. Christ is with us now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of people still get hung up on that. And again, I understand that. I'm not trying to be judgmental. I just hope that our attitude as believers wouldn't be that judgmental, but it would be more of like loving, you know, like, come on, take this. Yesterday we were looking for Easter eggs. We had, I don't know, I think we had like 100 of them in my parents. And it was getting down to only a few eggs left. And one of them, you know, had a $5 bill, and that was like the one to get. And it's a real tiny one. And so I started giving hints. You know, I was like standing in the yard, and I'm like, it's in front of me. It's not behind me, you know. And then it was like, okay, it's also to the left of me, not to the right of me. My nephew went the opposite direction every time. And we're like, what are you doing? Great kid. We love this kid. But even his dad is like, what are you doing? He said, over here, right? And as silly as that sounds, and we're like, what is going on with this kid? That's kind of what I feel like sometimes people are who won't come to Christ, you know, who won't see that. You know, you're like, you keep going over there. I've told you it's here. God has told us here. He's not hiding it. It's not, you know, but that's where we also have to remember it's God who does that work in people's lives, you know, and it's our job just to share with them and to love them and to be kind to them. And to do our best to pray for them, and to, when we have opportunity, share the gospel with them, you know, and hope that God will eventually save them and that they'll trust in him. And so hopefully we're doing that faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer, you got something? You turned to Samuel, looks like, and you had something you wanted to say. Please say it.
I was just going to say, first of all, it's funny, right? Jesus just shows up. Jesus doesn't ask them if he can show up.
Mm-hmm.
If he had knocked on the door, there would have been a lot of dirty laundry.
Oh, you mean to the disciples?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he just shows up.
Yeah.
That's the way Jesus works. He doesn't ask for permission to show up and speak the gospel to you. Second of all, he proclaims peace be to you. Which is a way of handing over. So we make a distinction between what he accomplished and then how that's applied to us. So what Jesus accomplished, it is finished, is now being handed over to us to enjoy. And the way in which we make use of and enjoy the cross and enjoy Jesus is by knowing that he's come with peace. And Jesus hands over peace. I do think it's fascinating how he just gives it to him. Recently, I was at the new coffee shop, and I bought some chocolate for my wife, which I was able to partake of as well, but I did buy it for her because it was Michigan. It was cool. So I bought it for her.
Did you eat it before you got home?
No, I did not. I kept it intact. But I bought it for her without asking it for her. I didn't call her and say, hey, Courtney, if you really, really, really want this. I'll get this bar of chocolate for you. I just bought it for her. She didn't ask me for it. She didn't do anything for it. I just bought it for her. And then when I showed up at home, I just handed it to her here, and I said, I mean, basically, in essence, hey, I just thought of you. I thought you'd enjoy this.
You threw it at her.
No, but it's...
You have no choice.
I thought about it. Open your mouth. Take it. Now, she could have taken that and said...
Get to the choppa.
The choppa. That's a great commercial. And she could have taken that and just thrown it away. But the reality is the gospel is that. It's sliding the bar of chocolate across and saying, here, this is yours. And sometimes even in the preaching of the gospel, we preach peace potentially. That you can potentially have peace. But the way the gospel comes to us is like it comes here whenever it came to David. The word for good news that's used in Greek, euangelion, is also used in the Old Testament for the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew. But the word, the Hebrew word then is used again in 2 Samuel, where Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, runs to tell David. He says, let me run and carry news to the king that the Lord has delivered him from all his enemies, from his enemies. So he comes to announce a past finished victory for him. He's proclaiming peace to the king. The Lord has saved you. He has got you peace. And that's what Jesus does here. He just hands over peace to him. That's what Jesus does. He comes and says, mission accomplished, you now have peace. Now, the reality is faith, if David was to disbelieve the runner, he would say, that's ridiculous. There's no way we beat Absalom's army, because our army is so much smaller than Absalom's army. And he's got Amasa, the leader, right? The guy that was the leader of Absalom's army. He's got all those people. If he had disbelieved the message, he would have been saying the message was false. And he would have then made the messenger a liar and said, whoever told you that that's true, they're lying. And I think that's the way the gospel comes to us. I think that's a powerful thing, though, because we're going to people and saying, listen, your peace isn't simply potential. Now, you won't enjoy this peace if you don't believe it, but I'm telling you, it's finished and it's accomplished, past tense, once for all time for you. That's the way the gospel runs. That's why Isaiah says, the feet of those who bring good news of the fact that your God reigns. Why? Because he just won on the battlefield. Mission accomplished. And so that's then what Jesus is doing here is what he does in Ephesians, right? Where he says he came and preached peace to you who are far off and peace to you who are near. And he's brought together us. So Jesus, in this, and through your preaching, Tim, and through whenever the word is preached, whenever we preach the gospel, we're not simply offering people a potential peace. We're proclaiming to them an accomplished peace that actually has happened, that is a reality, whether they believe it or not, but they won't enjoy it if they don't receive it by faith. But faith has to receive what's been done. And so that's a powerful thing for people to realize, because the old Adam in us, even if we say there's a potential peace, we will start inwardly thinking, all right, so what are the things I have to do in order to get Jesus's peace that he potentially will give me, right? And then you'll start thinking of things to do in order to conditionalize that peace. And what Jesus does here, he doesn't even give the disciples the option. Just shows up and says, peace be to you.
I talked about...
Hands it over.
Yeah. And I saw that kind of goes with... I said the peace promised by God through Jesus in two ways. Declared peace, where Jesus declares peace. Like, it is finished, meaning he's defeated.
Right.
It is over. The war is
finished.
Over, right? But it's not just a peace declared in that way, because so I could live in a country that's in war, but then peace is declared, but yet I still don't feel peace.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're going to be, or you could be a holdout. It's kind of like,
or even like, wasn't it in the Civil War, peace was declared, but still a lot of deaths happened after peace, right?
Right. Yeah. You could still be fighting the war, or you could be like, somebody who says, you know what, that's true. There's been a peace agreement reached, but I don't accept that. I'm going to keep fighting.
Right. And so there's this idea of, yeah, peace has been declared, but
right,
maybe not for me, or I don't really sense that, I don't feel that at this moment. But the peace that Christ gives is also an experienced peace.
Because of the objective.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so I wanted that. I wanted to mm-hmm. say that because I thought that was important, is you get to experience peace now. I think yes. a lot of times as Christians, we do look forward to heaven, as we should.
Right.
But we think, well, that's when things are going to be good. It's like, well, no, things are actually good now, and you are to feel that way now. Again, it's right. not all going to be hunky-dory, but there is a peace, even in difficulties, that God gives you that you can feel and understand.
Well, the subjective peace is enjoying the objective peace.
Right, and so...
That's what it is. So it's not like there's an either-or. It's not like there's two kinds of peace that Jesus offers here. Mm-hmm. He offers you the objective peace, which will bring you subjective peace. Internally.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. It's just like, you know, if you were, you know, whenever World War II was going on, you, the day before the surrender, could have still been full of anxiety because, you know, so many guys are still dying and they're trying to take Berlin. But then all of a sudden, whenever you hear peace has been declared, well, then that brings an internal subjective peace automatically to you. And that's the way I think the objective and subjective aspects of the one peace play out in our hearts. We hear the objective peace. And then it sinks in and creates subjective. We enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and so then hopefully the peace that we have as Christians is we know what Christ has done and we believe that, but yet we still sin. But we can still have great joy and peace knowing Christ has forgiven that sin. And so it goes back kind of that battle of guilt and shame and peace is, you know, I think all Christians are still going to have some shame in their sin, and there's a healthiness to that. But you shouldn't wallow in that because you know peace has been given to you, and so we take great joy in that. And so we're not sitting here wrestling with our salvation. It's done. Right. I'm not wrestling with God. Does God love me? No, he does love me because Christ yeah, died for me.
One of the things you said was that you cannot declare peace over yourself.
No, right.
God has to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So where does God declare that to me? Right here. Out of Jesus' mouth.
Yeah. Yep.
And if I can't find it out of Jesus' mouth, then I have no right to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's proclaimed to me as given to me. The chocolate is slid across the table to me.
Yeah.
And Jesus is saying, I got this for you. I want you to enjoy it. You mean for me? Yeah, for you. And there's no other way for you to have peace and peace and enjoy it unless you just take what I'm giving you right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the exciting part about sharing the gospel, is not simply to say there is a potential way that you can be saved. I get to hand over Jesus to people, so to speak. Jesus is handing himself over to them, even to those who reject him. He offers himself and hands himself over to them to be received. But if they take him and throw him on the ground, then Hebrews says they've crucified again the Son of God to contempt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the distinction that you made, Tim, about peace that's objective and declared versus peace yeah. that's felt mm-hmm. and real is, I mean, we see that distinction in Scripture. I think even like you quoted, I think from Romans 5, mm-hmm. Since we've been justified by faith, we have peace with God, right? That's that declared justification, right? That's what that declaration is. Mm-hmm. But then earlier, you know, I even quoted from Philippians about, you know, having a peace that surpasses all understanding. That's not talking about like your justification. That's talking about peace in the midst of turmoil of yeah. life.
Or even the disciples, it said in verse 20, they were glad.
Yeah.
He showed them and they were glad.
Yeah, I'm sure that it was pretty freaky yeah. having a person just pop into the room. And so I'm sure part of Jesus saying, peace be with you, is don't freak out, right? And so, but just that subjective element of having peace mm-hmm. that is experience through a sense of communion with God, because in that passage, Paul's talking about prayer, encouraging Christians in the midst of turmoil to go to God in prayer. Mm-hmm. And you can go to God in prayer as an exercise of the declared peace, right? Outside of that peace, you have no right to talk to God. But he has opened that up, right? And so as Christians, you have access to God to have that peace.
Yeah.
And it's not just when you're feeling guilt for sin. It's when you get a bad diagnosis. Mm-hmm. It's when your children run away. It's when something happens in your marriage. It's mm-hmm. when your parents die. It's for anything like that yeah. that would cause suffering, turmoil, questioning, whatever that would be. But that subjective element is very real, but it's based upon, like we said, the objective.
Yeah. And we have plenty of opportunity, don't we, to share about this piece. And I believe God still is working in people's hearts and minds. I drove a lot this past week, and I can't tell you how many billboards, how many advertisements, being in other places about Easter Sunday, you know. And I think a lot of times we can look at our country and just think of how bad it is, and nobody wants to hear about the gospel anymore. And I guess there's some truth to that maybe, but I do think generally there's a lot of people willing to hear, and we believe we serve a God who still is willing to save and wanting to save.
How many families ate ham yesterday?
I mean,
we don't know.
I did.
I mean, right? That's the Christian influence.
I loved it. It was so good.
Did you? Now, Scott got revealed a little bit. I did not bring this up, okay. But we were at a... someone who's well known in our church's house for we were sharing in a an Easter lunch,
okay.
And then all of a sudden the green beans get passed.
Well, I like green beans,
and I didn't say it because I know I know
Spencer's sitting right across.
I know
from
Scott
me.
Slater, and all of a sudden Scott gets the green beans and hands them on to the next person, and this individual says, "You don't like green beans, Scott?" And Scott's like, so Scott has to open up. He likes fresh green, you know, super. And they're like, these are from my garden. And then Scott's like, well, you know, that wasn't good enough for him.
No.
But that was really a funny moment.
You only like them crunchy?
Mm-hmm.
Not like, yeah. Not,
I like
not,
them sauteed
not
or grilled or roasted. No, I don't
with
want.
With potatoes. Like
I don't want
stuff.
Mushy. I don't want mushy green beans.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just awesome. That's just my that's me.
It's okay.
I didn't say anything.
I
wasn't like, you know.
You
just
quietly passed them out,
and he got called out by
them.
The host of the house.
And my wife called me out for not giving any to my daughter, but I don't want to give my daughter nasty food. So.
Oh my goodness, that was hilarious. No, they were very gracious to us, but no, that was a funny.
The
moment.
Ham though was phenomenal.
Oh.
It was good.
Good.
My wife made the ham.
I know.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
The carrot cake was your wife made
my
the
wife
carrot
made cake.
I've never heard
from
ham
scratch.
Described as phenomenal. That's like, that's a pretty big word for ham.
I would much rather have ham than turkey.
That's fine. I wouldn't use the word phenomenal with turkey. Phenomenal saved for like.
I've had phenomenal
prime
turkey
rib,
too.
Steak, that kind
you
of
know
stuff.
You know, I heard of somebody else eating prime rib yesterday. I forgot who it was.
Mike Clark did because he sent me a picture.
Oh.
He said, how's your ham?
I've never actually had prime rib. So if anybody wants to invite me over
have
for
it?
Prime rib. No, I told you that.
I need to make. Yeah, I can make you some prime rib.
Yeah, we need to do it.
I had it the other day.
Yeah, but.
No. We had prime ham.
Prime ham. It was USDA prime. Is that what that means?
Wagyu ham.
Wagyu.
A wagyu.
Is that? That's not
no,
possible.
No.
No.
Wagyu's beef.
That's Japanese.
It's just, yeah.
There is a form of pig that's like Herkshire or something. It's like a special.
The thing, though, is one of the most impressive things about the meal that me and Spencer partook of yesterday was when you sat down at the table. It was like the old style, like all the dishes are on the table. You pass
it
around.
Family, yeah.
Okay. And, but the mashed potatoes had a rectangular pool of butter.
Where the stick had been set
in
there.
The middle.
That's
where
neat.
It was very clear there was a stick of butter sitting there once, but it had since melted. And
that's
it was,
how you
a,
know it's good.
It was a pool of butter.
It was great.
And before you got in, you had to like really mix it in. And they were saturated, that's for sure.
We had no mashed potatoes at ours. There was cheesy hash browns. And
Scott would have loved that.
I like cheese.
And,
I like hash browns.
Baked sweet potatoes, like the whole sweet potato.
Those are good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
We like those too.
It was good. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you guys had a good time. Hopefully others did. Hopefully
yeah,
people
I'm sure
got
everybody
to get
got to go home. They weren't sad eating their ham and sad. They were happy.
Yeah. I drank a
happy ham.
Grape Faygo. That was good.
Ooh.
Yep. It was great.
Mm.
That colored Easter eggs.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a book. Bob Lapine wrote a book. It was like 12 things you didn't know about Easter or something. They're giving it away, Truth for Life. Mm. And he talked about eggs. And all the way back to Luther, he hid eggs. And it had a meaning behind it. Yeah, like so it like went past him even. A lot of people think, this is just our world, you know, getting in the way.
I think it was a pagan thing because of fertility, right?
No, he said it had a Christian connection, actually. Seriously.
I'm sure they probably did.
I mean, you can question Bob Bean all you want. You could probably write into him if you want to do that.
I'm not
going to do that. This was his book that was published.
There's going to be a Q&A session.
Yeah.
At the upcoming Basics conference that you could.
Bob won't be there.
Why won't he?
He's never there.
He's never at the Basics conference.
Well, I'm sure that
he lives in like
Arkansas. Or
yeah, he lives downtown.
You can at least bring it up and make sure that people know.
I have a question. Can you give us the pagan connections to egg with Easter?
It's like there's already been problems at Truth for Life, and if paganism is creeping in, then that's going to.
No,
be
I'm okay with taking. It's kind of like the Christmas tree, right? Luther was big on the Christmas tree, but it was obviously a pagan.
There's people arguing
that
too.
It was. That's okay.
Maybe.
And I'm okay with
that. A long time. Yeah.
I'm okay with that. You know. Mm-hmm. But you know, like the Incas played an ancient form of basketball, right? Remember that, where they would shoot it through the hoop, and
that
whoever
was with
lost
their feet.
They put it through a hoop above.
They kicked it,
and whoever lost got sacrificed or something like that.
They kicked it. They didn't
shoot
it
back. That needs to be a youth camp event.
Yeah.
I can think of some people who should play that.
Yeah. Man, right. What was that movie that Mel Gibson directed, like Apocalyptica?
Apocalypto.
That. Yeah, Apocalypto. Oh, yeah. That was weird.
Never heard of it.
It was a strange movie.
It was about like the
It didn't
human.
Have like a single line in it. It was like very like, yeah, I didn't
it's
talk.
It's like all Aztec-y or something.
Yeah,
and they're like, was the very end right where the Spanish are showing up?
I don't remember.
On the shore.
I don't remember. I saw it one time and I was like, I never want to watch this again. It was kind of that kind of movie.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
All right. Anyways, well, that's that. We've done another sermon recap. Hopefully it's helpful for you. We do hope that you have a good week this week. Remember, next Monday, April 8th, is the eclipse.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, as I was driving,
I like how you
couldn't think of the word.
Eclipse.
I couldn't think of the word. As I was driving home, it was impressive through Ohio. The advertisements for that.
Yeah.
Camp here.
My
stay
parents
here.
Told me about it.
Yeah, everywhere. People were really, really pushing the eclipse.
So Perrysburg has a thing right downtown.
Yeah.
Because they're right about the 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Monday, next Monday.
Yeah.
Anyways.
That's a big deal. Like, there will be people from all over.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I can't wait for the next one.
I'm going to look. When's the next one?
2099.
That's in Michigan. It won't be in the Lower Peninsula of Michigan until 2099. It'll be in the United States.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Scott knows that.
Probably won't be alive.
I've seen one. And I'm going to go see this one.
I'm going to see this one, too.
Yeah.
I got my glasses bought.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Good.
Yeah.
You got the cheap paper ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
I look at them
without
the glasses.
Probably have some if you want. Yeah. I'm a man.
He's at the doctor next week.
I think I've
your
read.
Eyes are burned.
So this is a random information, but I'm pretty sure Sitting Bull, before the Battle of Little Bighorn, had to do what they called like a crimson blanket, which is like a blood offering to the gods, where you let yourself get slit in all these areas and bleed, and part of it is you sit there and stare at the sun for a while. And he did this before the battle, so that way trying to ask for help so they could defeat
it
Custer,
worked, didn't it?
And it worked.
There you go.
So
you
Custer's go. Custer died. But
it's like the priest of Baal.
Can you imagine that, though? Like, he would dance and get himself into a trance and, like, get cut all over the place, dripping blood everywhere. But they called it a crimson blanket.
That sounds like doing, like a Tough Mudder to me. That's like what a Tough Mudder experience would be like.
Oh, you going to get hit in the barbed wire?
Well, it's like I've been seeing they're coming. There's a Tough Mudder coming to Michigan, and like the video advertisements of it are of like a guy running through the cold water with these like electric probes that are hanging down, and you have to run through them all. It's like
sounds like fun.
Sounds dumb.
No. Yeah.
No. No way. Yeah. Go through
Anyways,
the Arctic enema.
All right. We hope that you have a good week. We look forward to seeing you this coming Sunday. Until then, God bless.
Peace.